Thank you, John. Thank you, Reverend John. Better get used to it, huh, everybody? We'll practice. Before I introduce our guest minister, I'd like to talk first about Women's History Month and give you a little bit of information regarding our lineage. In researching this, I wanted to talk about Reverend Nona Brooks. She was born March 22, 1861. Nona was introduced to New Thought philosophy through her sister, who had attended classes by Kate Bingham. She wasn't entirely sold on the New Thought philosophy right away. She came from a family that was pretty sickly. So while she was attending these classes, she found herself healed from a persistent throat infection and became a believer from that. So she began studying with Melinda Kramer, the founder of Divine Science. In 1896, Nona Brooks answered the call to ministry and in 2 years became an ordained minister of Divine Science, studying under Melinda Kramer. Nona Brooks went on to become founder of Denver Divine Science College. She inaugurated the Divine Science Church of Denver, and in the process, became the first woman pastor in Denver in 1899. First woman pastor in Denver. She served on many civic boards, including the Colorado State Prison Board. In 1922, Nona Brooks aligned her Church of Divine Science with the International New Thought Alliance, which is still going strong now. Nona Brooks has been described as a prophet of modern mystical Christianity and a leader in the New Thought movement. It's good to know our religious science family tree because while doing this research of Divine Science and Nona Brooks, I discovered a deeper part of our religious science lineage. If you remember, Reverend Catherine spoke earlier in the month about Emma Curtis Hopkins. I don't know if anybody looked at that YouTube video with her mouth moving that she was talking about. Melinda Kramer was ordained by Emma Curtis Hopkins. Nona Brooks was ordained by Melinda Kramer. And Ernest Holmes was ordained in Divine Science by Nona Brooks. So it is through this very strong women wanting answers for their own healing that much of the New Thought movement was established. So we speak of love and law, and it is through a very strong pull of the divine feminine that contributed to the birth of the New Thought movement. So this is Nona Brooks, and she's part of our lineage. So before I introduce our guest... So before I introduce our guest minister, Reverend Catherine sent us a little video.
Good morning, everyone. Greetings from South Carolina. I'm here visiting my mom, helping her get ready, cleaning out the house and getting ready for her move to Michigan. And also we celebrated her 80th birthday yesterday. So I'm sorry I'm not with you today, but I'm so happy that Reverend Patrick is. I've wanted to have him come back to CSL TV for a long time, and I'm just sorry I'm not there to enjoy him also with you. So I'll be back next week, and I wish you well this week, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Blessings. Have a great day.
So as she mentioned, Reverend Patrick Arbula is here today to give us our talk, and also he's going to be doing a workshop afterwards. So please stay, enjoy the food that we have, and come back for the workshop. So Reverend Patrick has been a leader and a teacher in the Human Potential Movement for over 30 years. He's been a minister, a meditation trainer, and a life coach. He's the author of the book, The Magic of the Soul, Applying Power to Daily Living. And he has some in the back, and if you'd like it to be signed, he'll be there available for signing. He will be facilitating a workshop, like I said today, The Joy Factor. And also, he told me that he has another book available, and he could talk to you about that at the bookstore, because he tried to explain it to me, and it has to do with the computer and stuff, and I'm not good at that. So please put your hands together and welcome Reverend Patrick.
Brings me joy. Give John some more love. This guy's amazing, right? So glad to be back. I'm curious, how many people remember me from the last time I was here about 8 years ago? One, two. Good. I'm going to do the same talk I did then. All right. So radical gratitude. Otherwise, you're going to switch it up if everybody's hand went up. So everybody's hand is going to go up in a minute, I have a feeling, though, because I have a question for you. How many here, by a show of hands, have something, anything in life that you're grateful for? Anyone? It's unanimous. All right, but I'm not convinced. I want to feel some more energy about that. So if you're willing and able, stand up with me, and if you have something you're grateful for, we're going to raise our fist into the air and scream yes 3 times. Ready? Yes! 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 Doesn't that feel good? I thought so. All right, you can sit down or remain standing or dance in the aisles, whatever will bring you the most joy. So, I'm convinced, but I want to feel even more of that energy. So I'd like to hear what it is you're grateful for. One at a time, if possible. Call it out. What was that?
Health.
Family.
My life.
Community. Right here.
My children.
Good weather. Yay.
Our beautiful spiritual church.
This center. Some people still call it church. That's okay. What's that? Freedom to make our own choices. Beautiful. I'll tell you why I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be here, to be back. Grateful. Wow, what a beautiful sanctuary. I mean, it's better than the last one, and I know you guys are moving soon, and that's going to be even better than this one, right? Just keeps getting better. All right, so you know what occurred to me? That have you had the experience when you give a gift to someone, and they, maybe you didn't think that much about that gift. You just thought, oh, this would be nice to that person. You give them the gift, and they light up like the sun. Is that the greatest feeling, to be the recipient of that kind of gratitude, right? Doesn't it make you want to give that person more stuff because it feels so good? Well, guess what? The universal presence feels the same way, not in an emotional sense, but in an energetic sense. The more we say yes to our good, the more the universe wants to throw more good upon us. Yes? So that's regular old gratitude. And now we're going to move into talking about radical gratitude. So how many people here, by a show of hands, have had something, anything that was difficult, challenging, or painful happen let's say, in the last year? Anyone? Most of us, again. So of those who raised your hand, in retrospect, how many are actually grateful for what that challenge or difficult or painful thing is? Most of the hands went up again. So you people are crazy. Some people might say, why would anyone be grateful for something that's challenging, difficult, or painful? Anyone want to share, who raised their hand, what the painful or difficult situation is and why you're grateful for it? Yes?
My mom died about 13 months ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
the experience has made you who you are today. Now that is accessing the good in something challenging, right? It's powerful. So I'm going to tell you about my story and how the book, The Magic of the Soul, became the book that it became. So originally I started out with the intention of writing a book called The Magic of the Soul, How to Manifest What You Want in Life. And I felt I was pretty darn good at manifestation because I had manifested a wonderful career in the corporate world, working for Sage Publications, making a six-figure income. I had a wonderful marriage of 13 years. I was healthy. I was an athlete in my 20s. I was a tennis pro. And I was writing the book around 40 years old. And funny thing happened on the way to the magic of the soul. Everything fell apart. I became chronically ill. The corporate job went away. My marriage of 13 years ended, all within about a six-month period. It felt like everything that I was identified with on a personal level, on an egoic level, was stripped away. And the chronic illness was so bad that I would be laid up in bed for 2 weeks at a time. I tried to figure out what it was. I went the traditional route, went to Mayo Clinic. They did all these tests. There was no diagnosis for over 3 years. And I was doing everything alternative I could think of course, meditation and spiritual mind treatment, energy healing, hyperbaric oxygen treatments, throwing lightning bolts at it, and nothing was changing the situation. And all the while, by the way, I was resisting the experience. I couldn't understand how this could happen to me. Someone who had been meditating since I was 18 years old. I'd been in this teaching since I was 24 years old. How could this be happening to me? And what finally happened is I gave up. And by the way, let me also say that my father died at 42 of cancer that was not diagnosed for several years. And so it seemed to me that, you know, I may be coming to the end of this life journey. And so what I did was I gave up, but not in an apathetic way. I gave up in a surrendering way. And I thought, you know, if I am to die from this, I am going to use the experience of dying to understand who I am at the deepest level as a sacred being. And guess what happened? I'm standing here before you. So. And so I began to heal, but it was not a direct line to healing. What would happen is I would surrender, I'd start to feel better, and then I would go back and do something I used to be able to do, like take a walk. That would put me back in bed, and then I would resist again because it felt so good just to have a little bit of energy back, to just feel that sense of well-being again. And then when the symptoms would come back, I'd resist again. Then I would remember, after a little time, oh yeah, it was that surrendering thing that got me to feeling better. So I'd go back into surrender. And this happened then in a cyclic way. It was though my soul had designed the absolute perfect scenario for me to learn how to be in a consistent state of surrender. I ask you, what would life be like in a consistent state of surrender? As I say in The Magic of the Soul, why do I wait until the very crescendo of struggle to surrender? Why not surrender at the very first sign of struggle, right? Why not remain in a place of peace consistently? And so the theme for the book shifted. Rather than it being only The Magic of the Soul, How to Manifest What We Want, Yes, manifesting what we want is magical, but what's even more magical is appreciating what we have, like the reading that Dawn did this morning. And not only appreciating the things that obviously bring us joy, but especially the things that challenge us the most. And I know that the book would not have become the book that it became if not for that illness, if not for that challenging experience. It wouldn't have become curriculum. It's used as curriculum. I still get emails just about every day from people teaching the class and from students who say this is the most transformational book I've ever read. So that was all wonderful and good, but the greatest gift, the greatest blessing was how it transformed me, how the experience of writing the book and the healing that came from it. Because when I was writing it and I became ill, I thought there's nothing magical in this, but I was so wrong. So this is how I wrote about it in the book. When we're in the experience of appreciating the sacredness in life, we open to a world of unlimited possibilities. Because we are alert to the magic, we notice opportunities that we might otherwise miss. Life becomes filled with a deeper level of peace and meaning as we recognize every experience as magical and know that each experience leads us to an ever-increasing expression of our soul energy. If or when we are operating from the perspective of our soul, our timeless, infinite self, we see the larger picture. Asking what there is to be grateful for in any circumstance moves us into this sacred perspective. It is an entrance into the sacred. I'd like to share the story of Suzanne Summers. Remember who Suzanne Summers is? Three's Company and Thigh Masters. That's what she was famous for. And by the way, when I was 16 years old watching Three's Company, little did I know I would someday be quoting Suzanne Summers for her philosophical wisdom from the pulpit. And so we had a bunch of fires, as you know, recently. But several years ago when we had the fires in Malibu, hers was one of the homes that burned down. And so she was interviewed standing in front of the smoldering ashes of her home. And she was asked, how do you feel in this moment? And the first words out of her mouth, without any reflection, were, I know something good will come from this. You feel the power in that, right? Something good had to come from it. And something good would have come from it anyway, but she had to realize the good sooner because she was open to it. Right? Surrender. Tina in the meditation this morning had a quote that I'm going to use for years now. It said, the universe surrenders to the still mind. The universe surrenders to the still mind. And so what this has led me to, this practice of looking for the magic in every situation, because as conscious beings, we always look back, right, and see that the times when we were challenged the most are the times we grew the most. But what do we do when the first sign of struggle comes up, something challenging in our life, an illness, a financial loss, is we tend to resist, right? So the practice that evolved for me and that I offer to the world is to look for the magic in every situation, to see the blessing in the moment, to harvest the good there rather than waiting till later. The phrase that came to me after practicing this for many years was, perhaps the measure of enlightenment is the distance between discomfort and acceptance, or discomfort and surrender, or discomfort and joy, or discomfort and gratitude. Yes? So that's what we're talking about today. And I think that our most celebrated writers and teachers today are all saying the same thing. And this is an idea that, by the way, when I first started lecturing this about 15 years ago, I would see a lot of ahas in the audience. And now I just see a lot of heads nodding because it's been integrated into the social unconscious. So our most celebrated teachers are all saying the same thing a different way. Byron Katie, any Byron Katie fans, says, love everything, every experience. Eckhart Tolle says, give up resistance to what is. August Gold says, invite everything. Robert Sheinfeld, who I'll quote later in Busting Loose in the Money Game, says, appreciate everything, every experience. I say, look for the magic in everything. Now, how it comes to me is see the beauty in everything, because there is beauty in everything, as long as we look for it. So I'll tell you a little story about something that relates to this. So I do these retreats all over the continent. I'm doing one on Catalina Island. We've gone back to the island recently. 4 days and three nights on a private beach. It's beautiful. And but I did these for 10 years in Canada, 5 years in Saskatchewan. And I did it on a friend of mine has a and client has an equine-assisted learning center, which is a fancy name for a farm with horses. But these these are very, very special horses that are trained to help us to get clear on our own authenticity by working with them. So we were preparing for the workshop, and Carol, my friend, said to me and her, someone who was working there on the farm, woofer, do you know what a woofer is? Workers on organic farms. She had a PhD. She was a teacher from Ireland. Excuse me. Water's back here, right? And and so she's just this wonderfully playful, fun lady. And so Carol asked us to go and to clean up the barn as we're getting ready for the seminar. And so we're in there and we're baling this hay into this this pit. And apparently there were pigs used to be in the barn and their excrement would go down in this pit, right? And so we're getting rid of the hay and baling it in there. And so we had to like kind of compress it down. So I'm over in this one spot where it's very compact and I'm putting my weight on it, compressing it down. And Carol says, be careful, you don't want to fall in there. And I said, I've got this. I'm an athlete. I can handle this. And so I go over to this other area where it's not so compressed, and I step, and I didn't fall in, but I did go from 6 foot one to about 3 foot one in a nanosecond, and then I fell back on the floor on my back. And then, and to preface this, do you remember the Pink Panther movies with the bumbling Inspector Clouseau, right? So what happened next, I'll describe it in the words of Kate. She said, so here I am, baling hay with this famous author, and he just did this really stupid thing, and I don't know what to say. I don't know what he's going to say. It's a really awkward moment. And so I stand up, I turn around, I brush myself off, and I say, every move I make is perfectly planned. And we laughed for 30 minutes straight with our jaws aching, our stomachs were hurting, we were just laughing so hard. And that became the theme for the whole seminar for the weekend, is anytime anyone did anything stupid, they would say, every move I make is perfectly planned. And this is a spiritual practice, by the way. Anytime we laugh at ourselves or at anything, brings us into a lighter place, brings us into that larger perspective, right? And so Robert Sheinfeld says in Busting Loose from the Money Game that we're manifesting or we're creating our reality not from the presence of our personal self, but from the presence of our expanded self, our soul, which means that everything is for us, right? And so if that's true, and I believe it is, then every move you make is perfectly planned. You cannot make a mistake. Everything that we might think, if our situation that we're looking at in our life is something I don't like, it's only because I'm seeing it through the limited perception of my personality. But when I surrender, when I rise into that higher perspective, then I can see that this has to be for me. And now, you know, the question, what's the magic in the situation, or what's the opportunity for growth, or what's the sacredness that wants to emerge from this? It's not just about getting an answer. Sometimes we won't get an answer, in which case we can simply trust that there is a magic that's emerging. The important thing is asking the question, because now I change my relationship to the situation. Rather than being a victim of the situation, I am now accessing it to empower myself. That's the secret, right? That's the reframe. That's the shift. So I'll give you a practical application of this in a moment. I want to tell you a little bit about the workshop we're doing, or play shop, I like to call it, we're doing this afternoon. So it's called The Joy Factor, A Life of Infinite Freedom. And it's the most joyful and fun play shop that I've ever developed. It seems like everyone I develop gets to be more fun and lighter. And yet, we start out really going deep into what are our challenges. And what I find is the interesting thing is the deeper we go into what I call our shadow joy, then the more we can experience and embody our light joy. And so one of the exercises or one of the practices in the workshop is, and this may sound impractical, is wake up in the morning, ask what will bring me the most joy, and then go and do that. But I will show you in the workshop how this is actually the most practical thing that you can do for your life. And I have clients and people who have done this workshop who are living life in pure joy as a result of that simple practice. I'll also demonstrate to you a practice that I've developed for keeping the energy positive and high even in the midst of our greatest challenges. So what I experience with people is by the end of the workshop, we're just walking on air. So my wish, my prayer would be that every single person here could join us today for the play shop. That's probably not possible. But if you don't have plans, join us. You'll be glad you did. If you do have plans, change them. If you absolutely can't change them, sign up on my mailing list, and the next time I'm in the area, I'll let you know. So the practical application of this is, well, first I'll tell you a little joke. So two brothers, Bob and Ed. Bob loves cats. Ed hates cats. Bob has this cat, it's beloved, his beloved companion named Perky. Bob's going away on vacation and he thinks, okay, where am I going to leave my cat while I'm gone? I could leave my cat with Bob, but Bob hates cats. But you know, he's been doing a great job taking care of our elderly mother for years, so I guess if I can trust my mother with Bob, I ought to be able to trust my cat with Bob, so with Ed. So Bob drops off the cat, goes on vacation, comes back 2 weeks later, calls up his brother, says, hey, Ed, how you doing? By the way, how's Perky doing? Ed says, well, I got some bad news, brother. Perky died. Oh, mom's calling. Click, got to go. And so Bob is just overwrought with grief about the passing of his beloved cat, Perky, and he's also really upset about the callous way in which Ed gave him the news. So he grieves the loss of his cat, and he calls up his brother a couple days later. He says, you know, Ed, I got to tell you, it really hurt my feelings, the uncaring way in which you gave the news about Perky. And Ed says, well, I don't know what to say. Your cat's dead. How else can I say it? And Bob says, well, you could have broken the news to me gently. You could have given it to me gradually. You could have said, Perky's up on the roof playing. And then you could have called me up later and said, you know, Perky fell off the roof and he hurt his leg and we're doing everything we can and we think he's going to make it. And then when I came to pick him up in person, you could have said, you know, we did everything we could, brother, but Perky didn't make it. And Ed says, well, okay, brother, I apologize. I guess I could have been more compassionate in the way I gave the news. And Bob says, it's okay, brother, I forgive you. Bob says, by the way, how's mom doing? Ed says, mom's up on the roof playing. So sometimes we're like Bob and that we don't want to hear the difficult news, right? So the practice is, for the next week and beyond if this works for you, anytime you feel discomfort of any kind, whether it is emotional discomfort, whether it's physical discomfort, ask what's the magic in this situation. You know, in our teaching, the disconnect that sometimes happens, much more so in the past. It's not taught this way anymore, but it still shows up in subtle ways, is if something happens you don't like, if you end up being ill, someone might, you know, you might think, what did I do wrong? What was the wrong thinking that created this? Or even worse than that, when someone says to you, what was the wrong thinking that created that situation? That always makes you feel much better, right? Not. The better question to ask is, what is the greater freedom, magic, joy, love that wants to emerge from this situation? Doesn't that feel better? Now you're accessing it from a soul presence. So what is the magic? What is the opportunity for growth in this situation? So I'll finish with a quick story about when I spoke at Asilomar years ago. We're going back to Asilomar. Anyone going to the SOAR conference? First time in like 10 years? I'll be a featured speaker there, by the way. But the last time I spoke there, 15 years ago, the book had just come out as curriculum, and practitioners and students and ministers were coming up to me and thanking me. The greatest compliment I ever got was a very respected minister in our teaching came up to me. She put her hands on my shoulders. She looked me in the eyes. She said, I want to thank you for writing this book. She said, I was teaching the third chapter, and we were studying this idea about loving ourselves unconditionally. And she said, if it wasn't for this synchronicity, what happened was I was diagnosed with cancer. And if it wasn't for that synchronicity, I would have judged myself for getting cancer. I would have, in fact, probably beat myself up a little. And it was because of that synchronicity of studying that and embodying this understanding that we are perfect just the way we are, even with our ability or possibility to create for ourselves illness so that we can grow in a new way, I would not have healed as quickly and as completely. And so it came to me just recently that I was speaking with a client, and the phrasing came to me that when I love myself unconditionally, this is the most important spiritual practice we can use, is self-love. When I love myself completely and unconditionally, I realize that I am not myself. I am, in fact, the self. I am, in fact, pure love. And so are you. Thank you very much. Love you.